B-Pod Studios.
The Felger and Mazz podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook.
What's up?
To me, the whole thing with the finger under between the legs, antiquated.
Archaic.
And weird.
I mean, the whole thing is freaking silly.
It's Felger and Mazz, presented by DraftKings Sportsbook on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Celtics are still alive, and they win comfortably. Why do I get the feeling this is going seven games? There's probably no reason to think that. I know it's recency bias, and this is what the Celtics do. This is who the Celtics were during the regular season. This is who the Miami Heat were during the regular season, where you go, man, the Heat, they're not that good. Celtics, man, they're great. And then you get fooled into how are they going to perform if they did this over 82 games? Well, they get into a seven-game series. Well, that's what makes these matchups so interesting, because sometimes you don't match up with that team. But last night, you saw what Boston is capable of doing. Is it too little, too late? And I did think about this. You know, when you think about no team comes back from a 3-0 deficit. And then I always think of the Red Sox when they came back from a 3-0 deficit and happened to witness that firsthand. And then who do I see courtside last night but Derek Jeter and Alex Rodriguez? Well, of course, there will be a comeback. And if Curt Schilling shows up with a bloody sock tomorrow night, then it's on.
All right, Dan Patrick, to get us into the Celtics Heat Game 5 tonight. As I mentioned to you yesterday, I've gotten hooked a little bit on the 0-4 Red Sox Jeter A-Rod thing at the building the other day. I thought that was a cool moment. It's not many cities or fan bases have had the experiences we've had here where that's even on the table or even meaningful. And so I think that's kind of cool. You can't do that in 95% of the country, because who the hell's come back from 3-0 in that regard and may have a chance to do it right now on this kind of stage? It's just no one has teams that are good enough to even consider such a thing, and you do. So, like, play it up. All good. I would just, on Dan Patrick, I'd say, I don't know if Curt Schilling would exactly be the guy. I mean, he should be, but I don't know. I wonder how, just for example, Jaylen Brown would happen to feel about Curt Schilling.
How about Ortiz?
So Curt Schilling, but can you get Ortiz? He's around, right?
Yeah.
Can you put him in the front row somewhere?
He's got a place down there, I think, yeah.
Well, I'm not talking about
they're
down
up
there.
Here. Yeah, they're up here.
Whatever, fly him up.
Yeah, right.
Put him in the front row. Like, come on.
Sure. No, it's a good idea. Like, play the head games. You know, absolutely. Jimmy Butler have an ex who can sing the national anthem?
So, like, I don't know about, like, if Butler or the players are vibed in on that. Like,
the fans certainly are, though.
But the fans.
Without question.
Like, you know, it just adds to the, just the juju, the karma in the air, the whatever, the thing. Adds to the thing. As far as we're concerned, I think these NBA players, like, I don't know. How old was Jimmy Butler in 2004?
Oh, gosh.
He's 33. Yeah. And is he a baseball
12?
Fan?
Right.
Is he a 10-year-old diehard baseball fan in Chicago? Like, I doubt it. I doubt he even knows what happened. So it's not about getting the heads of the Heat. To me, it's just about that thing, you know, playing that thing. I'd do it. I'd do it if I were the Celtics.
Sure, why not?
And if I were a hardcore Boston fan, I'd get hooked on that thing. And if I were the Heat, I would not let A-Rod and Jeter back in the building. I wouldn't if it goes back there for Game 6. When it goes back there for Game 6, Maz, how are you feeling today?
I'd let Jeter in. I wouldn't let A-Rod in.
It's a fair point.
Yeah, so look, I mean, as you get closer to the game, I can tell you this. I'm eagerly awaiting the game. I think that there's something to dig into now, and it gets more interesting with everyone you go. But I need to see it from the Celtics tonight. I'm not convinced that, like, this is the start of anything. I just need to know that they can string it together. Now, if they were to come out tonight and, like, blow doors, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, we got our game back. Now we're going back to Miami, and they got to play with Game 7 looming over them. The possibility of having to come here for a Game 7, then I think you really got them sort of backpedaling a little bit. I'm not convinced they have Miami backpedaling yet.
No, me either. And so you say when it goes to Game 6, so I'm not convinced of that. Like, the Gabe Vincent thing, that injury, him being out, is huge for the Heat. There's no doubt about that. But the Celtics smelling their own farts. I didn't love what they were saying after that game, specifically Jaylen Brown after that win. Like, he had really anything to do with it or anything to do with this series so far, or the last two. So the smelling their own farts, worst home record in the postseason over the last 2 years in NBA history, 11 losses.
Whoa, say that again?
Their 11 losses at home are the most over a two postseason span of any team in NBA history.
Well, that's crazy. Yeah. Well, that's crazy on two fronts.
Like, I mean, that makes sense.
Well, because it's what's interesting about it is you actually have to be good.
You have to advance.
You have to have played so many playoff games. Because, I'm sure there's a lot of teams that have gone 0-4 at home or whatever. You know what I mean? But if you're getting bounced in the first round. So, I'm like, that's incredible on a couple different fronts.
And then there's the officiating thing, you know, and I know.
So what do we got?
So it's Mark Davis is the crew chief for tonight's Celtics Heat game. In the past 2 years with Mark Davis or Ed Malloy reffing, but Mark Davis, Boston is 2-9 at home. The Heat are 19-4 with them reffing, 10-3 on the road, 10-2 this year overall. So, you know, I know the bankroll boys believe in the wrangle. I tend to, too. I look at something like this and I'm like, it's not good for the Celtics.
So I don't believe in the wrangle as much as those guys do, but I do believe that I think the ref assignment crawls into people's heads and teams' heads. Like, for example, Scott Foster, the extender, was in this game 4 down in Miami. So not only is he known as the extender, he's got some incredible stats related to him reffing games with one team on the brink and the series getting extended. So he's been called the extender. But not just that, the Heat have like a hellacious record with Scott Foster on the floor. What was it again? It was like they've lost 13 of 14 or something?
They're 0-5 this year, I think, and 12 out of the last 13.
Okay. So I watched that game from whistle to whistle, and I didn't feel that there was, and not that they got every call right, but I never looked at one call and said, that stinks.
No, me either. They were benefiting the Heat early, I thought.
I think that was ref totally on the level. But I think the Heat look at that ref assignment and go, oh, they gave us Foster. And it just crawls inside your head, and at some point I think it crawls inside the head of these players. So it's a long way of saying I don't expect like these refs to be throwing the game. Like, I don't go that far, but I do look at it, and if the Celtics have been paying attention, who is it again?
Mark Davis.
Oh, here's this Davis guy. Remember when he screwed us in Cleveland?
Yeah, like, totally.
We never seem to win when this guy's
Well,
here.
Like Tony Brothers, right? They clearly have a thing in their heads about him.
Absolutely. So it's like, so I believe in that thing. It's like the players sort of, oh.
Consciously or subconsciously.
Well, now we know what the league wants, you know, and it's like that sort of messes with you. So it's a factor. Those ref assignments are a factor.
Yeah, and look, I wonder half the time if the league knows it and you know, so they offset them, right? Like, in other words, well, Miami hates this guy, or this guy hates Miami, but he earned the game, so we're going to give him this one. The next game, we're going to give Miami one of their guys. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they manage them, engineer them that way. I mean, it is an interesting coincidence. Say you had Celtics refs the last game. Tonight you have Miami refs. Like, that's just a coincidence?
And just quickly, I just think besides the record, with how this team has played in the series up until this last game, and how I think the fan base looks at them, I think it's kind of a double-edged sword, them being home tonight. Like, yeah, they can get up and the place could be a hornet's nest, but there's another side to that coin. If they're dribbling the ball off their shoes and knees, falling all over themselves, and can't hit a three, that place is going to feel like a morgue.
So, we'll see. They've not been a good home team. That is obvious. How about the injuries? Gabe Vincent is out for the Heat.
Big one.
Brogdon has a forearm, something?
Yeah, it's a slight tear.
Has he been ruled out?
No, he was taking part of the shoot-around. I was just looking at some clips.
You think that's a big one, Mess?
I think that Vincent's a big one, yes, because he's one of the guys that's absolutely torched you in this series, along with Caleb Martin. It's one less guy or one fewer guy to make shots. And I think the Celtics can withstand the loss of Brogdon. Now, whether or not you like Marcus Smart, he's a starting caliber NBA player. So he'll get more minutes. White will get more minutes. Like, you can make up for it that way. And I'm okay with, I think I said this, we never got to this particular point, but in terms of those three guards, the way I would do it if I'm Azula at this point is play the two that are playing better. And right now the two that are playing better are Smart and White. So if that means you don't use Brogdon in this game, so be it. You're probably better off without him, frankly. He's been awful in this series.
Well, that I think he'll be able to do. If Smart is the third of the three, they won't be able to bring themselves to do it, but that's a different story.
Right, right.
That's always been one of the problems. They can't keep Smart on the bench because what the Marcus Smart thing.
I'm just speaking as it pertains to the loss of Brogdon.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that big a loss. Well, I don't think you really come out of it that negatively.
So Gabe Vincent just means more Kyle Lowry is what it means. And in game one, he hit some shots, man. Mm-hmm. He was really important to them, and especially in the first half of game one. He, like, sort of helped them set that tone, even though they were down at half. He, you know.
Oh, he was hitting big shots.
Since then, I don't know exactly what he's done. His plus minus in this series is wretched. But then again, it's like, well, they don't need him. The Heat don't need him for the next week. Can he, you know, he's been around the block. He's won a title. It's not like he's going to be, the moment's not going to be too big for Kyle Lowry. It's just, is he in shape? Is he in condition? Can he, the Celtics are going to pick on him defensively, like mercilessly. But can he give the Heat a half of big shot making? You know, he can. The answer is he can.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Look, I think Vincent's quicker.
Much.
Okay. So, but I wonder, like, as you say it, the Celtics can probably isolate Vincent if they want to and take advantage of it. They did a better job of that in the last game. With Lowry, I don't know if it's as acute because he'll take some dives.
Yeah, he will.
So he might be able to get a couple of calls going the other way. You know, I feel Vincent plays harder, though, I think, or quicker. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm not giving Lowry enough credit. Entirely possible.
Well, no, you're not. I mean, I just gave the best case for the Heat. Don't lose to Kyle Lowry. And just I'll say the same thing about him as I'll say about that Heat team. What a fail if you lose to this team. If you lose tonight, what a gag. You're at home. You're heavily favored. You've started, you know, started to tilt the momentum a little bit. You're much, much better than this Heat team. What a effing fail gag if they lose this game. And if they lose this series even now, which I expect them to win tonight. How about you folks out there? To your calls right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Every day they work their hardest to give you the best show they can.
I think that's rare.
It's Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
To the point about being home, they're currently 4-5 at home.
I know.
Like they, and even some of the games they've won, they haven't looked that great. So it does, it's very weird because we've talked a ton on this show with guys on that team and on other teams about there being a legit home court advantage there. They clearly have great fans, but it hasn't seemed to make any difference in this playoffs.
It's not just this playoffs. They have the most losses in two postseasons at home in NBA history.
Bizarre.
It's double digits. It really is bizarre because I do think it's a tough place to play. And truthfully, some of this is their inability to close games. For them to win three games in a row, well, it would have to be four, but for them to win the next three games, you're going to need elimination game Tatum, 10 elimination games in his career. In those 10 games after Tuesday night, he's now averaged 30 a game, little under 9 rebounds, 6.5 assists, and 44% from three. You're going to need 40% shooting thereabouts, right? If you're the Boston Celtics as a team, they're 37-2 this season when they shoot 40% or better. So you look down their roster. Game four is a great example of this. Grant Williams hits three or more threes. Marcus Smart hits three or more threes. Derek White, Al Horford, all four of them, three or more threes. They're going to need threes. And then on the other end, it's got to be about containing the basketball with Jimmy Butler and defending the three-point line. And of course, in game four, they did an outstanding job of that.
J.J. Redick, more on that home court thing. He said it there. I heard the cut. I don't know why it didn't register until Murray said it. Most home losses over a two-year stretch in NBA history. That's crazy. And what is crazy about it is that it's such a great building. I mean, it is loud. It feels like as loud of a building as any building I see on TV anyway. So it's not you. It's not like it's a dead atmosphere or anything. It's them. It speaks to their immaturity and how they just get too comfortable and complacent. And
you've talked about that second half start, you know, when the wine and cheese crowd was back there, or the J Stews of the world with their floor seats or, you know, sucking down whiskeys, a little late to get back. They're schmoozing. The place a little too quiet. And the other team takes advantage because they're more dialed in, especially a team like the Heat.
You beat me to it. It's not the building. It's the team.
Oh, yeah.
It's the team. And I don't know. We didn't put enough emphasis on this. Maybe that's one of the real positive things from game four, 38-23 in the third quarter. So, you know, and this was a theme last year with Golden State in the finals. Golden State historically has owned the third quarter in the postseason. So they always come out ready to play in the third. And it all makes sense. If you win the third quarter, you're probably in control of the game going into the fourth. And then you don't have the pressure of dealing with the final 3 minutes down the stretch of the game. And so maybe you're a little more comfortable in terms of execution. Like, if I were the Celtics, when you add all this together, it's really something to hit them over the head with. Fellas, take control of the game in the third quarter. Wake up, come out ready to go in the third quarter, and there won't be as much pressure in the fourth.
Okay, back to your calls. You can still weigh in on the Patriots OTA story. It's a good one. And the Celtics, Robel in Revere? Yes, Robel.
Yeah. First time, long time. I'm a big fan of the show. This game, you guys were just talking about, you hit it right on the money. Whenever the Celtics feel comfortable, I feel like that's when they crap the bed. Because even this Gabe Vincent injury, it's similar to the DeJounte Murray injury where they come home and they don't know how to win against the DeJounte Murray-less Atlanta Falcons. Hawks. I made over $8,000 this season betting against the Celtics whenever they're favored by more than 8 points. How ridiculous is that?
So you got the Heat tonight.
I got the Heat tonight.
Okay. Bet against them when they're heavy favorites at home. Interesting.
Yeah, look, again, I mean, in this series, you know, taking the points isn't necessarily a bad thing. There's only been one game that has gone the other way on that.
But the DeJounte Murray one's a great one. Hawks come in here, you could easily close out the series without their second-best player, and you lose. It's like, that's so them.
Yeah, they lapse.
I'm trying to find the record on the season when, like, a starter is out in the opposition against that team is awful.
It really?
Yeah, it's something like... It's something like 2-13 or something like that.
Still do it now?
Maybe that's why Miami did it. They're sitting Vincent on purpose.
In the Eastern Conference Finals, they're going to keep doing that? Jamie and Lynn. Yes, Jamie.
Hey, what's going on, Felga? Long time, first time here from Lynn. I just want to start off by saying that last caller from Revere is a fair weather fan from Boston. But I'm here to talk about Brogdon. I think sixth man of the year, but no show in the playoffs. What do you think about that?
Okay, for your first point, the previous caller is just about business. This is just business. He's betting. So, good for him.
Yeah, root for the green he's rooting for is the real green.
Exactly. Yeah. Makes him smart. Fairweather fan. This is money, dude. What's the second thing he said?
Brogdon.
So, I mean, Maz gave it to you. It's like, Les Brogdon might be value add. He's sucked this series. So at the end of the day, maybe you're better off. I can't believe I'm saying with more smart. Certainly more Derek White. Brogdon's hurt you this series. So I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing.
I mean, the last three games, he's 5-20 and 1-10 from 3-point.
He took a 0-for 2 games ago. So, like, really, what are you losing out there? Jonathan and Franklin on the Patriots and the OTAs. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, hey, guys. Big fan of the show. So when I was in the service, if there was a leader that we didn't like, but they weren't immoral, we kind of just like put up with their crap. But if there was someone who was genuinely immoral and had poor character, we would do anything to kind of, you know, bite them in the ass and kind of screw them over. That's, you know, Felger touched on it in the world of business, but that crap happens in all organizations, even in the service. And that's what I see, you know, players exposing Joe Judge, trying to screw him over, because his whole yelling nonsense that got exposed last year just goes to show his character. And that's really what this is about.
I'm just going to stop you. If he was, I don't know if he's a decent guy or not, but I'm just going to say this. If he was a decent guy, or the players felt, put it to you like that, if the players felt he was a decent guy, or they had a good relationship, or they thought he added value at the end of the day, they wouldn't go narc on him.
Correct.
For a workshop. They'd start off by saying, Joe, you know, we're only supposed to be here 4 hours, you know, so some of the guys don't appreciate this. You know, they'd just handle it. They'd handle it internally. They'd go to him. They'd say, Joe, you know.
They'd be professional. They'd be gentlemen about it. Like,
yeah. Or the, you know, and again, his demeanor, which clearly rubs people the wrong way. They'd say, Joe, you know, pick a leader. Pick Matthew Slater, for Pete's sake. You go to Joe Judge. If they felt good about him as a person and a professional, they'd send someone to say, Joe, you know, the way you're coming off here is rubbing some guys. You're not getting the most out of them. You know, they would talk to him. But it shows you there's no trust there. There's no relationship there. They probably think he's a bad dude. And it's just what a bad start. Already, This is a first spring practices, and the players are diming out coaches and getting them suspended. Like, good start, guys.
Yeah, and I don't think it takes much to endear yourself to the players one way or the other. In other words, I think they either have to like you or they have to respect your knowledge as a coach. It's got to be one or the other. Because, again, how many people have had hard-ass coaches, but they say this guy knows what he's doing?
Sure.
So as a kid, you might rebel, but as an adult.
Oh, if the guy's making you money, i.e. he's putting you in position to succeed, you put up with it.
Right. It makes you better.
I mean, that's been Bill's. That's why Bill, whenever he, and again, we know a lot of it's now Brady, but the whole thing with him has always been, I'll put up with him because he puts me in a position to succeed and my career's going to benefit because of it.
Yeah, I still think there's a certain amount of truth to that with Bill. Like, with Judge, though, if you have neither one of those things to fall back on, you're porked. You do something like this, the players are going to look at it and go, this is a joke.
Think about it.
Somebody, you know, let's just call the league, call the PA, because this is ridiculous.
As Bedard put it, Joe Judge was named the assistant head coach. He's the second in command. And ostensibly, that guy's job is to make the head coach's life easier. He's one that's supposed to know all the rules, follow the rules, a compliance kind of thing. If someone steps out of line, it's like, well, that's actually, you know, he's there to, so Bill doesn't have to deal with any sort of crap like this. And it turns out he's the one responsible for the crap, mm-hmm. the assistant head coach. And again, why is he here? Why is he here? He's here because he's cheap, he's free to the organization, he's a crony of Bill. And so it just continues. Here's our buddy Raffy in Vermont. Hi, Raffy.
Hey, guys. I am calling to say something. Like, usually when the Celtics play, I always put the radio on because I like to listen to Conrad. But I must say, the satellite radio, they start playing the pregame, the mid-halftime, and after the show, Jim Murray show. Jim, you are doing a fantastic job, man. I cannot go back to listen to, even though I love Scott on the TV, but I stay with you, bro. And I have to say that, dude, you are doing a very good job with that show. Thank you.
Raffy, I appreciate it, but I don't want to take the credit. It's the other Murray, you mean. Joe, not Jim.
Close. Yeah, Joe Murray.
All good. Joe Murray. Yeah. No, he does a hell of a job. But I don't want to take the credit. Thank you.
I'm Bill. I can do anything. But yes, that's exactly what's going on still.
That's Joe Moore. You got a quick thought on the game, Raffy? Okay, that's it.
I'm Bill. I can do whatever I want.
No, quick aside. Joe Murray does do a heck of a job, and there's a new co-host at night after these Celtics games. I happen to be in the car at this hour. This is why I hear a lot of Joe Murray and this stuff. And
oh, Cerrone Battle.
Cerrone Battle.
Yeah.
This guy's good. Have you heard him?
Yes.
I don't know who it is. I just know from listening. I was going to say, who is this guy?
Like, he had done some stuff on NBC Sports Boston before. So beyond that, I'm not sure.
I don't mean to belittle. I don't know. I'm not familiar with it, but I listen to him. He's terrific. Like, good. Like, I was also to the point, like, pull some of this stuff because he's. To Raffy's point, after the post game show ends, it's Joe Murray and Battle.
Cerrone Battle.
Cerrone Battle. I'm telling you, it's worth your while. 100% agree with Raffy. Here is an update from Big Jim Murray. I have a quick thought on the Florida Panthers, Murray, defeating the Carolina Hurricanes last night. And guess who got the game winner? And how that relates to the Bruins. Again, we'll do that after Big Jim Murray gets you up.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Felger and Mass continues on the Sports Hub.
Kachuk out at the right point covering. 15 seconds in regulation. Kachuk, Reinhardt near circle. Reinhardt in the circle. Shot, and it's fought off by Anderson. Barkov right circle. Down to the goal line. Kachuk in front of shot. He scores! He scores! He scores! Matthew Kachuk, a power play goal! It's 4-3 Panthers with 4.3 seconds to go. Time. The Panthers take a 4-3 lead in the waning seconds for the face. face off from center. They'll put the clock to 4.9. The puck is down. The puck rolls over the Panthers line down to our right. The final seconds tick away. This one's over. The Florida Panthers are going to the Stanley Cup Final. The Panthers are Eastern Conference champions.
Matthew Tkachuk. How many game winners? I know they've written it. I forgot the number. How many effing game winners? He beat you in overtime. What was that? Game five. Chance to close him out with that giveaway from Ullmark behind the net.
Mm-hmm.
Beat you there. He was right in the middle of the game seven overtime goal. Helped win the puck behind the net. Get it to Verhaeghe. And I don't know what he did game winner-wise against Toronto. But he had two overtime goals. And that goal with 4 seconds left last night to sweep the Carolina Hurricanes into the Stanley Cup Final. Matthew effing Tkachuk.
Yes. In this series, all four games, he either scored the goal or assisted on it. He had three goals and the game winners now. Three game winners and assisted on the fourth.
For Pete's sake.
Unlike anything I've ever seen, I think.
And the other one was a Verhaeghe overtime, wasn't it? Was it Verhaeghe or who was it?
Yeah, I think it was Verhaeghe. But Tkachuk himself has three overtime winners and that buzzer beater essentially last night. 9 goals in 16 games. Maz and I were talking about it during a break earlier. I've been trying to rack my brain, like, when I could remember anyone in the NHL postseason, like, putting on a clinic like this that's not a goalie. And you got to go back to, like, the early 90s. Lemieux, I remember, in, like, 91 went, like, boobs out.
Mark Messier with the Rangers?
Messier and Leach in 94, too, were the other ones I could think of. Beyond that, I don't remember anything like this.
I mean, and you know, like, I'm sure there were guys who put up better numbers, but the timing of his goals has been unbelievable.
So we cut out the replay review in there. I'm surprised they let that stand. I thought for sure, I think it was Bennett, had his stick between the pads of the Carolina goalie there. Forgetting the name.
Anderson.
Anderson. And I thought for sure they were going to bring that puppy back because the Panthers were on a power play, and I thought it was kind of a sketchy power play to begin with.
Trip behind the net. Yeah,
yeah, for 100, you know, 180 feet in the entire other end. They got a tripping call with 57 seconds left in the third period of a tied Stanley Cup conference final hockey game. Like, what? Put your whistle in your pocket. I was going to say up your ass. Like, don't call that. So I thought it was a shaky call. And then when I saw Bennett's stick between the pads, I'm like, well, this is how they make good on it. And I'm stunned they allowed the goal.
Well, I thought they did a pretty good job explaining it, though, on TV, and that Tkachuk himself, I think, kind of saw it and waited a beat before he shot it. I think if he shot it almost immediately, then it probably would have been turned back because the stick was, you know, in the crotch of the goalie. But if he waited a little bit, and then it didn't, the interference really wasn't there. Well, I'm glad that it stood.
Okay, well, anyway, Tkachuk is still Tkachuk. And
he's ridiculous. They're so fun. I have a real pro. I don't know who I'm going to root for now in this final. I really don't.
Vegas and Bruce Cassidy. Would you stop?
They're 11-1.
So he goes tonight. Cassidy and the Vegas Golden Knights. Who are 11-1?
The Panthers in their last 12 postseason games. 11-1.
So how I tie this into the Bruins is yesterday they released the finalists for the GM of the Year award.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Don Sweeney's on the list, as he should be.
Mm-hmm.
These are all regular season awards. So you now have finalists. This is an aside first. You have finalists for Vezina,
mm-hmm.
Jack Adams,
mm-hmm.
Selke,
mm-hmm.
GM.
Mm-hmm.
Am I missing any?
Hart. Wasn't it the Hart?
Is Pastrnak one of the three Hart finalists?
Yep. Yeah.
He is?
Yep. Third, yeah. I mean, I think he's third, but yeah.
Okay. So, and finalists for Hart. And all you got right now is your Schmenzer in your hand.
Correct. Okay. You can bounce in the first round.
So, like, that is, like, it's just every award you win and every finalist announcing it, make it hurts even. It's like, it makes you look even worse. Like, it's just, ugh.
No, the only saving grace is they're the only team that's given the Panthers a hard time.
Well, they're going to win all these awards, but Bill Zito in Florida is another one who's up for the GM of the Year award. Zito or Don Sweeney?
Zito.
Of course.
This is one of the greatest trades I can remember in sports. This guy is he's changed everything.
So the ballots the ballots were cast, though, before the playoffs, right?
Sweeney's going to win it.
He is going to win it. Sweeney's going to win it.
But Bill Zito pulled off the move of the league.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, it is what the Bruins sorely, sorely, sorely need. And I don't think have the balls to do, or they haven't anyway for 20 years. And that is trade a core key contributing piece for a DNA change, for to alter the core of your team, a real hockey trade. Now, this was something of a distressed asset because Tkachuk told Calgary he wouldn't resign there. He was a restricted guy. So Calgary was sort of backed into the corner where they had to trade him and just get the best offer. And Florida came through with the best offer. But from Florida's perspective, it was a DNA franchise-altering kind of move. Because Huberdeau was their leading scorer. He had 100-something points the year before when they won the President's Trophy. So they had the best record in the league. He was their leading scorer. And they easily could have said, well, we just got bounced by the vagaries of the postseason. The postseason's a crapshoot, but we believe in our team. We had the best team in the league last year. We'll have the best team in the league this year. We're going to roll it back and just hope for better luck in the postseason. They easily could have done that. Easily. Instead, they said, no. We lack something. We score a ton of goals. We compile a ton of regular season points, but we don't. We're missing something, and we're going to go get it. And we're going to trade our best offensive player to go get it. What a move. And they sent a first-round pick. Jonathan Huberdeau, Mackenzie Weegar, a defenseman, Cole Schwitt, who I don't know who that is, and a lottery-protected first-round pick in 2025 for Matthew Tkachuk. And they then gave Tkachuk an 8-year, $76 million contract. Do the quick math for me.
Nine and a half.
So I do remember when David Pastrnak was up, and a lot of people around here, most everybody said you have to give him what he wants. Mm-hmm. You have to make him the highest paid player in the league. Wee! Pasta! He scores! Wee! Ty Anderson. Gotta make him the highest paid player in the league. Gotta give him what he wants. I said, no. And 11 and a half, like, oh my God, the Bruins got away with a great trade. Great move by the Bruins. Great signing. It's a steal. And even then, I was like, I don't know. I ask you, would you have Matthew Tkachuk at 9.5 or David Pastrnak at 11.5?
Tkachuk.
Not even close.
Really? I say that as borderline no-brainer.
And by the way, I would have said that before. Not that I did. I don't know if I did say it before the series. But one whiff of Matthew Tkachuk and the way the Panthers played, you should have realized. You know, the 11.5 for David Pastrnak is not the steal you think it is. It's just not. Give me Matthew Tkachuk at 9.5 any day of the week.
I mean, the guy competes like I was going to say nobody I've ever seen, but there were lots of guys who compete. He is perfect for the playoffs. He wins puck battles. He wins fights for the puck. So he's just competitive off the charts. You can build your franchise around that guy.
You know who else is a Hart finalist?
Tkachuk.
Matthew Tkachuk.
And what's his name?
And McDavid. Yes. McDavid's going to win it.
But I'm not even talking about that. I'm just talking about, well, the Panthers have themselves a franchise player who's also, but Pasta's a Hart finalist. Yeah, so is Matthew Tkachuk.
He's a wing, too, right? He's not Tkachuk's a right wing.
Yeah.
Unreal.
So it's like, but Pasta's the best. No, he's not. Just like Bergeron's not the best player in the league, and he never was. And David Pastrnak's not the best player in the league, and he never was. And the contract's not the steal that you think it is. And there's players you'd rather have than David Pastrnak. And Matthew Tkachuk is definitely one of them. What a trade for Bill Zito. And he's probably going to finish behind Don Sweeney for GM of the year. So how do you like them apples? So there's your hockey minute. How'd you enjoy it? Get back to your calls on whatever you want. Also, we have Maz's Tears.
Yeah.
Special edition.
Oh, you're going to like him this week.
Related to Jeter. Related to A-Rod. Related to 3-0 deficits. Your calls and Maz's Tears in a long commercial-free segment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911, and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Exactly what was it you heard?
It's Belger and Maz. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Jimmy, when you sometimes in the playoffs, there can be kind of these big swings within a series. There can be big emotional swings. After a game like this, how do you personally kind of avoid from getting too low yourself?
Stay consistent. Do the same thing that I do, that we do after every game. We're going to listen to some music. You know, we're going to drink some beers back there. I'm going to go have some wine. I don't think that you could
just focus on basketball all the time. You have to be able to, you know, get away from the game a little bit. Think about it. But at the end of the day, you fall back on, you know, your habits, how consistent you're going to be. And myself and my teammates, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to smile. We're going to be in this thing together like we always are. And we're going to go get one on the road.
All right, super cool Jimmy Butler there, that comment after game four the other night in Miami. See if all that Michelob Ultra and wine did anything for him. They had a little travel snafu apparently coming in last night. Murray, what happened?
Yeah, over 3 hour delay to get out of Miami. So they got in around, looked around 8:13 p.m. last night. So.
Okay, so I guess I've heard like, oh they're going to be all messed up because – because what, they sat in the private plane for a couple extra hours and played a few extra games of, what's the game, that Bure?
Bure, right, yeah.
Whatever it is, that card game. Why was that a thing? Who got, was there someone who got in trouble
for
Bure?
Yeah, it was, what's his name? He used to play for the Wizards with the gun. The guy who could score a lot.
I don't remember the Bure thing. Anyway, so they got to play a few extra games of cards.
He was Greek.
And drink a few more Michelob Ultras. And, like, that's going to throw them off? I think they're fine.
Yeah, I think it was the ghost of red messing with air traffic.
It's not like they were stuck in the last row of the Spirit, you know, the freaking value jet. They just had an extra glass of wine and played a few more rounds of cards.
Exactly.
That being said, if the Celtics come back and win this thing, which I think is on the table, I think this is a series. I'm firmly on record as that. Maz scoffs at it. But it leads us to this week's tears.
Yeah!
Let's do it.
Bernardi Auto, they've got Audis, Hondas, and Toyotas. They are the ones who sponsor who Maz thinks is a fraud and who's for real. Maz's tears.
Yeah, into the tears of the clown.
Maz's tears.
The second tier. Hold on, let me get my pen.
Maz's tears.
Dallas.
Yeah.
Buffalo.
Tennessee.
Maz's tears.
Third tier.
Okay, here we go. Hold on, let me get my pen.
Maz's tears. 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 Tears.
All right, it is time for Maz's Tears, presented by the Bernardi Automotive Group. When it comes to auto dealers, the Bernardi Auto Group always finishes first. They sell service. They sell and service, excuse me, Acura, Audi, Honda, Nissan, Toyota, and Volvo. Bernardi for now, Bernardi for life. Visit them now at BernardiAutoGroup.com. Maz, what is the subject of this week's tears?
Okay, greatest comebacks in Boston sports history, and I put an emphasis on the last 50 years or so. You want to talk about Bill Russell and Will Chamberlain, do it on your own
time. Milt Schmidt, no seat at the party.
Not happening, no. And I would tell you up front, these are all professional comebacks. So if you want Doug Flutie and the Miracle in Miami, go blow it out your ear.
Pound sand.
Yes, exactly. For the people at BC and for Flutie in particular, I say that to both of you. Blow it out your nose. That's out. So here we go. We're going to start with tier five and move our way up.
Got it.
And let me give you one more criteria. These are all postseason.
Oh, postseason.
If you have a regular season comeback, you can go blow that out your ear, too.
Yeah, but the Red Sox Mother Day Miracle, exactly.
Oh, God, please. Who gives a rat's ass?
Stop it.
All the mothers out there.
No, it's got to be something relevant. It's got to be something that was...
Patriots Colts 2003? I don't know if that was really a comeback, but what a great game.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I bet there's a Patriots comeback regular season that was meaningful enough.
Okay, so I'm going to have to give you a little criteria along the way as to how I did this, but tier five, there's really only one, 1990. The Bruins, game four versus Hartford, were down 2-1 in the series.
I remember it so well. Dave Poulin, I think.
Yes, they were down 5-2 going into the third period. They tied the game, and Poulin won it in overtime to even the series. Had they lost the game, they would have gone down 3-1.
What a great one.
They went to the finals that year.
What a great game that was. I remember it as clear as ice, as clear as day. Milbury, well, who did he hug coming off the ice? He gave someone a neck hug. Coming off the ice. Who was that?
I don't remember, but it was a meaningful comeback. A lot of people don't remember that one. It was a
Dave
good one.
Reed or was it Poulin? He gave someone like a old school Italian sort of neck hug.
I loved Poulin. I loved Dave Poulin. What a good Bruin he was.
What a great game that was. I love that one.
Tier four, 1981, Celtics, Eastern Conference Finals. They were down 3-1 to Philadelphia in that series. They came back, won the next three. That was the first championship of the Larry Bird era. And our friend Cedric Maxwell, who's probably listening somewhere, maybe in his car now on the way to the Garden, Max got into a fight with a fan in Philadelphia on the floor in the middle of game six.
Slapped him silly.
Okay. Also, 2002 Celtics game three over the Nets. They were down 21 in the fourth quarter of that game. They came back to win it. Tremendous comeback. Some of these are games. Some of them are series. And the Red Sox in the ALCS game five against the Rays in 2008. A lot of people don't remember this. They were down 7-0 in an elimination game in the seventh inning. Seventh inning, down 7-0. They scored 8 runs. 4 in the 7th, 3 in the 8th, 1 in the 9th, and won the game. They then pushed it to Game 7 before losing.
These are great.
But the Game 7 at Game 5, rather, at Fenway Park was a big, big comeback at that time for the Red Sox.
I remember all of these. Schmatz just came in there. Who did Milbury give a night? I know Schmatz knows.
No, it was something else.
Oh, never mind.
Hey, now,
to yell at.
Oh, yeah. Are we in trouble? What do we do now?
We're conversation at 4:15.
What do we do now? All right, fine. Go ahead.
They called.
Tier three.
And again, I'm trying to give you these in chronological order. I don't know if Vinny posted them on the simulcast. 1975 Red Sox World Series Game 6. It was Fist home run, of course. It was Fist home run, but they were down 6-3 in the bottom of the 8th. Bernie Carbo's
home run was bigger.
It was a big comeback in the bottom of the 8th inning to push that to a Game 7. 1999 American League Division Series against Cleveland. Now I'm not going chronologically.
Pedro
Martinez. Red Sox were down 0-2 in that series.
That one's a personal favorite of mine. He came in with his arm falling off, and he took their souls.
That was tremendous. Troy O'Leary hit a big home run, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Yeah, he hit a pinch hit grand
slam.
Very
good.
I remember all of these.
And that was the original, they better not let us win one. Jimmy Williams told the team before the game, they better sweep us. That's all I have to say. Hmm. They came back and won 3 in a row. 1986, ALCS, Game 6. Oh, Game 5. I'm sorry. Thank you, Jimmy. Game 5, Dave Henderson's home run. Red Sox were dead and buried. They went on to win the American League Championship Series.
Game 6, though.
No, it was...
It was in Anaheim. It was Game 5.
It was Game 5. He's right. They came on one Game 6 and then blew him out in Game 7.
Okay.
In fact, they blew him out in 6 and 7 at home in that series. Jimmy's right.
Okay.
2006 Patriots division round versus the Chargers. Down 8 points in the fourth quarter.
Great one.
Against the best team in football. Patriots come back, win that game, get the winning points on a field goal. They outscore the Chargers 11-0 down the stretch.
Oh, no. Troy stripped Marlon McCree. That would have been a game-ending interception. Troy Brown stripped him and got the ball back.
Yep. 2008 NBA Finals, Game 4. Celtics on the road at Los Angeles, down 24 points in the first half. Storm back to win the game. And the reason why that is Tier 3... because they were going to win that series, I think, either way. They ended up winning it in 6. They were clearly the best team in the league that year. That is the only only comeback in Tier 3 that resulted in a championship. And finally, the Bruins against the Maple Leafs, 2013, first round. Down 4-1 with 10 minutes to go in the third period of Game 7.
That's a little, Tier 3 is a little low for that one, Tonto.
Okay, they didn't win the cup, and they were up in the series 3-1.
Yeah, but... those last 6 minutes.
Unbelievable.
I mean, come on.
Unbelievable. But that is Tier 3.
And points on the right side. A wrist shot blocked.
Reuniting Sagan with this line here.
And Bergeron a one-timer. Save Reimer. Rebound loose at the top of the crease. Red Sox score! Bergeron! Bergeron! And Game 7! And the Bruins win the series!
What a great call.
So again.
That's not Tier 3, baby.
Okay, so here's the distinction. Everything in the top two tiers, with the exception of the Celtics, resulted in a championship. Okay? Everything in the top two tiers resulted in a championship. You want me to do those?
Tier two, go ahead. Let's do it.
It's okay, tier two, here you go.
Because we're in trouble. I don't want to take a break.
2001, Snowball. Snowball. Patriots are down 10 in the fourth quarter of this game. We think of it as just the kick. Terrific comeback. Brady started airing it out. They won the game. 2007, Red Sox, ALCS. They were down 3-1 in this series. They came back, won the last three. J.D. Drew, Grand Slam in Game 7. 2013 ALCS Game 2, David Ortiz's Grand Slam.
Oh, that was Detroit. Okay.
We all remember that one?
Sure.
2014 Patriots Division Round versus the Ravens. 2 14-point deficits in this game. Two of them. They came back with the crazy offensive line formation that sent John Harbaugh into orbit. And then also the trick plays with Edelman to Amendola on the sideline. It was a tremendous comeback in Foxborough. Finally, Tier 1.
There's only one.
2004 Red Sox, down 3-0 to the Yankees, came back and won that series, but the Patriots have a couple of their own. That win over the Seahawks, no small thing, down 10 in the fourth quarter to the best defense in football.
Okay.
And the 28-3 game over the Falcons. I think all three of those belong in Tier 1, but those were your three signature comebacks, I would call them, in Patriots history.
You're the best.
Or in Boston history.
These are great tiers.
Would you tier these in Tier 1 as far as Maz's tiers?
Best. This is top tier Maz's tiers. Even though I would put, I'd put the Seahawks comeback in a different tier from the Falcons comeback.
Which one would you put higher?
I'd put the Falcons comeback higher. Even though
that's an all-time defense, and Brady in the fourth quarter was like a buck 30, two touchdowns,
I know,
surgical.
But it was 10 points. It wasn't 25. No, so the Falcons would be in a higher tier than the Seahawks, and I'd put that Bruins comeback. Even though they didn't win a cup, it's like, geez, Louise. Like,
yeah, I said this to Murray. We got to eliminate all the regular season ones. There are too many. Too many. It's the beauty of being in this town, is that you can have that sort of standard. And if you didn't win a championship, F off, Tier 3.
Top-notch tiers. That was tremendous.
Oh, I done it up! Who was it?
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.